This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal.
Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylow's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
People who have heard deathbed confessions. What are some interesting ones? Story one. When I was in the hospital, I shared a room with a man who seemed very quiet and tired. One day, I heard him tell the nurse that he wanted to stop taking his medicine. When I asked him why, he said softly, "I'm ready to go. There's no one waiting for me at home anymore." He told me he had lived alone for a long time. His family had moved far away, and most of his old friends had passed on. He felt like he didn't have a reason to keep fighting. The last thing he said to me was, "I'm just going where they are now." It wasn't a shocking thing to hear, but it was one of the saddest moments I've ever experienced. It made me think about how important it is to have people who care and how loneliness can weigh on someone's heart even more than illness. Story 2. My dad had Alzheimer's and was staying in a special locked ward because he needed a lot of care. By then, he was almost blind and couldn't hear well. One day, I went to visit him. He didn't recognize me at first, but then he started talking about me. He told me I had done better in life than he did and said he was proud of me. It was surprising because in real life, he was a quiet man and never said things like that when I was growing up. Thinking back, I realize now that he showed his love in ways I didn't understand at the time. For example, when he retired from work, his coworkers asked what gift he wanted. He chose a scientific calculator, even though he didn't really need one. It was the 1970s, and calculators like that were special. He gave that calculator to me when I went to university. I thought he was just giving me something old, but now I see he picked it carefully with me in mind. That moment with him in the hospital made me feel grateful for all the quiet ways he showed he cared. Story 3. This story comes from a hospice worker who talked to my class. If you don't know, hospice is care for people who are very close to the end of their life. It helps make them more comfortable by easing pain and stress instead of trying to stop death. She had a patient, a woman in her 90s who couldn't move and was mostly unresponsive. Sometimes, though, she showed moments where she seemed to recognize people. It's hard to tell how much these patients understand, so families were encouraged to spend time with her to help calm her. This woman was from a state known for its famous university and football team. Her family had gone to this school for 4 or 5 generations. But her great-granddaughter was the first in the family to choose a different university, actually the rival school. The family was okay with it, but often joked and called the girl a rebel or traitor. One day, the whole family was by the woman's bedside, teasing the great-granddaughter about her choice. Suddenly, the woman sat up, looked at her great-granddaughter, said, "Traitor," and then passed away. Story 4. My grandfather had very bad dementia near the end of his life. He kept making what seemed like deathbed confessions because he knew he didn't have much time left. He often said he had seen a murder, but never told anyone. However, each time he told us, the details would be different. This happened a few times every day during his last week. Eventually, we realized he was watching the local news and hearing about these events. After that, he started to believe he had actually seen them happen himself. Story 5. My partner's grandfather never talked much about his time in World War II. Being Australian, he actually joined the army when he was just 16 by lying about his age and name. Because of that, we can't find any official records of him. We do know he fought somewhere in the Pacific. When he came back home, the truth about his age came out. Since he was 18 by then, the army drafted him again under his real name. But he didn't want to go back to war. To avoid being sent back, he got drunk a lot, got into fights, and even hurt himself. His life after the war was tough. He struggled with alcohol and wasn't a good husband or father for many years. But later on, when his grandchildren came along, something changed. They helped soften him, and he showed a better side of himself. In his last hours, his mind seemed to take him back to those terrible war days. He said things like, "Oh God, they are here, and the enemy is behind us, sir." He cried out, "Stab him. Stab him. Stick him. And help. Medic." He also kept repeating different names. It was clear his mind was haunted by the pain and memories of war. A broken, tortured soul carrying those wounds even to the end. Story 6. This isn't a deathbed confession, but the last talk I had with my grandfather really stayed with me. He had Parkinson's disease and lived on a farm just outside of town. One day, he looked at me and said, "I'm getting too old to take care of Mom," meaning my grandmother. "I need you to take care of her for me, okay?" After that, his health got worse pretty quickly. I still call my grandmother every day. Whenever I can, I go back home to help out on the farm and be there for her. Story 7. This isn't exactly a confession, but it's a story that has stayed with me for a long time. My cousin and I were in a serious car accident. Unfortunately, he didn't survive. He had a tough life. His friends had pulled him into stealing and vandalizing a lot of things. He even ended up in jail 4 different times. It was hard to watch him struggle, knowing how much trouble he was in, but feeling like he couldn't break free. When we were both in the hospital after the accident, I stayed by his side. As his time grew near, he looked at me with tired eyes and said, "Well, if I go to hell, at least I'll be with all my friends. I love you." Even though he made mistakes and had a rough path, those words showed me how much he cared and how he was trying to find some comfort in the life he had lived. It was a sad but powerful moment, a reminder that behind the troubles, there was a person who wanted to be loved and remembered. Story 8. I have a great story about my great-grandmother. She lived a long and interesting life. She was in her 20s during the Great Depression and had a wild side back then. In fact, we don't even know the name of her first husband, just the one she married later. Over nearly 100 years, she collected thousands of owl things. She had owl figurines, clocks, wall hangings, potholders, lamps, stained glass art, salt shakers, more owls than you could imagine. We all wondered why she loved owls so much. She never talked about it, but we just knew owls were important to her. When she was very close to passing, around 98 or 99 years old, my grandparents asked her if there was anything she wanted to say or ask before she went. She thought for a moment, then said, "I never understood the owls." It turned out she didn't really care about owls at all. Back in the 40s or 50s, she bought a small owl kitchen item, maybe a trivet or salt and pepper shakers. Then someone gave her the matching piece. Before long, her kitchen was full of owl things. More and more owls kept coming until they took over most of her belongings. The lesson? If you're not really into something, say it early, or you might end up with a house full of owls for decades. Story 9. When I was a kid, my mom ran a nursing home. From when I was about 5 until I was 10, I spent every weekend with the residents. Because I was a child, some of them shared secrets they thought I wouldn't understand. Two stories really stick with me. One was funny, and the other was very sad. One woman was very old, maybe 96 years. Near the end, she had a last burst of energy and thought she was feeling better, which happens sometimes. One day, a black delivery man came with some flowers. After he left, she looked at me with tears in her eyes and said, "I can't believe I'm dying without having been with a colored man." The other story happened while I was reading Bible verses to a resident. Suddenly she said, "I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to drop that baby in the well." Those moments showed me how people carry all kinds of stories and feelings, even in the last days of their lives. Story 10. My great aunt passed away a few years ago. She was very sick with a virus that affected her brain, and she went in and out of being awake. It was really hard to watch. Many family members were around her in those last days, but one time I was alone with her when she said something strange that I kept to myself. That day, I was playing games on my phone in her hospital room when she started mumbling to herself. Her voice got more urgent, and then she called me over. Her eyes were wide and confused. I don't think she really knew who I was. She spoke quickly and unclearly, but kept saying the words boy and ingredient. After listening for a while, I understood she was telling me about how she used to cook eggs using the urine of a stable boy instead of water. She said she paid him well for it, but sometimes she would start crying and couldn't stop. Later, I looked it up and found out there is a traditional dish in China called virgin boy eggs. It seems she was fascinated by it and often made it herself, serving it to family, including me when I was younger, without telling us what it really was. I'm not sure if she was ashamed or proud of it, but it clearly stayed on her mind until the end. Story 11. This wasn't a deathbed confession, but a moment I remember from hospice care. There was a man who struggled with alcohol. Usually, hospice patients can have what they want as long as it's legal, but he was known to be violent when drunk. Because of that, he wasn't allowed to have any alcohol. Between his requests, he opened up about a fight he had with his best friend over some land and borrowed equipment. The fight was so bad they haven't spoken in 20 years. He said he didn't even understand why it became such a big deal and felt sorry for being so aggressive. He told me he missed his best friend and wished they hadn't lost all those years.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Because of that fight. Story 12. My dad was what you might call a know-it-all. He was a smart man and really did know a little about a lot of things. Growing up, he was like that, but he was also open to learning and would listen to people who knew more than him. As he got older and started having some mental health struggles, this got worse. Not only did he act like he knew everything, but he also acted like he understood why people did things, their thoughts and feelings, even when he didn't. One time, a friend was helping us with some carpentry work. My dad kept talking like he knew more than the friend, but this time he got rude about it. The friend finally said, "I've been doing this my whole life." My dad didn't listen, and after that, they didn't really talk anymore. It was sad to see that friendship fade. Story 13. My great-grandfather was in his mid-90s when he passed away. He had always been healthy, but he had a tumor that was too risky to operate on because of his age. Eventually, it got infected, and he died within a week. I went to visit him in the hospital. Our family used to see him often, but after a falling out between him and my grandma years before, we stopped visiting. Funny enough, I still ran into him at the store sometimes, and we always had nice talks. In the hospital, he told me not to worry about him. He said most of the people he had ever known were gone, and he was ready to go too. When he started feeling sick that week, he knew something was wrong. He made sure my great-grandma, who had Alzheimer's, was placed in a nursing home. He took care of her for so long that he wouldn't allow himself to pass until he knew she was looked after. They had been married for over 70 years. One of my favorite stories about them is that for more than 50 years, every Sunday, he would drive my great-grandma to church and then wait in the car for her. He hated religion, but he loved his wife. Story 14. This isn't really a confession, but I want to share the last thing my grandfather said to me before he passed away from lung cancer. I was about to go on a school trip to Rome. My family told me to go and take my mind off things for a few days. Before I left, I wanted to say goodbye since it might be the last time I could talk to him. He looked at me and said, "Have fun, boy. I'll see you next week." I went to Rome, and when I came back, he was already in a deep sleep because of his medication. He wanted to pass away peacefully while sleeping. The next week, I visited him again. He was still sleeping, but I told him all about my trip, even though I knew he wouldn't wake up. The next morning, he passed away. My grandmother told me, "He waited for you." I still miss him every day. Story 15. I didn't see this happen myself, but it was between my grandfather and his father, my great-grandfather. He wasn't a good man. He hurt his children, once even hitting his daughter with a table leg. I think he treated his wife badly too. One day, my great-grandmother left him and the kids. This was the 1930s, and I'm guessing he didn't let her take the children. Back then, women didn't have many rights. My grandfather left home when he was only 8 years old and had to take care of himself for the rest of his life. On his deathbed, my great-grandfather told his sons he had hidden a lot of money on his old property. He said if they came to see him, he would tell them where it was. No one wanted to see him. Story 16. I wasn't there when she made her confession, but the story leading up to it is really interesting. My mom was adopted, and my grandparents always loved her like their own. They never kept it a secret. Growing up, my mom tried to learn as much as she could about her and her adopted brother's birth parents. Back then, it wasn't easy to find that kind of information. My mom and uncle were brought to the orphanage with little info about their biological parents. Some details were kept secret on purpose. Over time, my mom collected notes and clues. She looked at things like which families might be connected and even property records at the library. Piece by piece, she put the puzzle together. Eventually, she found the names of her biological mother and her uncle's birth mother. She learned she was part of a big family with many brothers and sisters. Sadly, her uncle found out his birth mother had died soon after placing him for adoption. By the time my mom learned all this, she was married, had my older sister, and was pregnant with me. One day, she found a phone number that led to her biological mother's house. When she called, a young boy answered. He called for his mom, and then my mom talked to her birth mother for the first time. The conversation wasn't easy. My mom's birth mother, let's call her Bio-Gran, was uncomfortable with the call. She didn't ask many questions, and my mom told her story quickly. BioGrand said my mom could hang up anytime she wanted. After that, BioGrand sent letters now and then, but made it clear she never wanted the rest of her family to find out.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows you don't want to sacrifice reliability for savings. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select LG appliances and purchase two or three select major appliances to get an additional 10% off. Save big on LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.
BioGrand kept this secret until the day she died. One of her daughters finally asked, "Will you tell us where you went when you disappeared all those years ago?" And BioGrand confessed she had gone to a home for unwed mothers to have my mom, the child of an affair. I met two of my bio-aunts, but sadly both passed away a few years ago. So to sum it up, my biological grandmother had an affair with a milkman, left to give birth in a home for unwed mothers, and kept it secret from her family until her last moments. Story 17. This isn't really a confession, but more of a denial that helped us solve some important questions. I worked for a federal law enforcement agency that handled big crimes, including cases involving organized crime groups. Not exactly the mafia, but serious criminal networks. We had a suspect who was a mid-level player in a series of cargo thefts and robberies. We'd known him for years and arrested him several times. He liked to taunt us. Unfortunately, he got lung cancer before we could build a strong case against him. Things went downhill quickly. I went to see him at his home just before he went into hospice care. Everyone assumed he did at least half of what we suspected, and he knew we thought that too. But for some reason, he decided to give me a break. He said, "If I tell you something, will you keep it to yourself for a few weeks?" At first, I was unsure. What if he was trying to leak information about an ongoing case? But he promised it could wait, so I agreed. Then he said, "I know you're looking at me for the __. I didn't do it. He admitted he wanted to, but he named a real person responsible and where we could find solid proof against five or six others. Why did he tell me? He said the other guy never treated anybody right. He didn't say more. I followed up on the information about 3 weeks later, after the suspect had died. I never had to reveal where I got the info, because it was backed up by strong evidence. Story 18. My dad has a special gift. He can easily earn people's trust, and in a good way. Twice now, he's been told things by people who were dying, things they didn't feel they could tell their own families. One time, it was my aunt's mother-in-law who was nearing the end of her life. She told my dad that her husband couldn't live alone when she was gone. They both agreed that he needed to find someone new to be with after she passed. And he did. Within a year of her passing, at the age of 81, he remarried. The family was upset that he moved on so quickly, but my dad stood up for him. He reassured everyone that this was exactly what the late wife wanted. Story 19. My great uncle made a shocking confession just before he passed away, in front of his own children and grandchildren. He told them he had two sons no one knew about. What's even crazier is that none of his children had any idea. Not even my great-aunt knew. She definitely would have made a big deal if she had. Even more surprising, these two invisible sons had already passed away, one 5 years before him, and the other 7 years before. My great-uncle was 98, and his secret sons were 65 and 69. His children later found out that one of these sons had been a teacher at the same high school their own daughters went to. Despite the shock, the family reached out to the children of those secret sons. They connected and learned more about my great-uncle's hidden life. The wildest part, I actually dated one of the granddaughters of one of those sons, the one who died at 69. Talk about a few degrees of separation. Story 20. My granduncle once admitted something heavy from his time during the war. He was a lance corporal in the 43rd Wessex, part of XXX Corps. He didn't say exactly how many, but he told me that he and his mates used to force German prisoners of war to run, then shoot them in the back to stop them from escaping. He said he stopped after his commanding officer found out and gave him a serious warning. It's a difficult story, showing how harsh and complicated war can be. Story 21. This isn't exactly a deathbed confession. My family didn't want me to see my grandma in her final days because they worried it would change my memory of her as a happy, cheerful woman, and maybe they were right. Instead, I wrote her a letter. They read it aloud to her. They told me that some of her last words were my name, and she passed away just a few minutes after hearing it. Even though she was heavily medicated, enough to knock out an elephant, she still thought of me in her final moments. That's something I'll always remember about her. Story 22. My great uncle had pancreatic cancer and became very weak because of it. Every morning, I helped him with things like bathing, using the restroom, and changing his clothes. Those weren't his last words to me, but something he said has stayed with me. He told me, "I hate feeling so useless. I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry you have to do this." I told him I never minded helping him. I loved him so much, and I promised I'd always be there for him. A few weeks later, I had to move away because my mom wanted me back home. I was living with my grandparents and him at the time. He passed away shortly after I left. A few days later, his cat, who had been with him for almost 30 years, passed too. He was a good man. Story 23. I worked as a night janitor in the children's cancer ward at my local hospital. One night, a little boy around 6 years old called me into his room. He needed help adjusting his pillow because he was hooked up to wires and couldn't move easily. I parked my car outside and went in, thinking it was okay to help since it didn't require a nurse. He started asking me questions about my job. The first was if I was a nurse. I said no. Then he asked if I had seen his mom in the hallway. He told me she had gone to the cafeteria to get him strawberry milk and a donut. I said no. He was quiet for a moment, then looked me straight in the eyes and said, "If I pass away soon, I hope my mom won't be sad." That hit me hard. This little boy knew he might not survive and worried about how his mom would feel. I didn't know what to say, so I told him that many kids survive cancer, hoping to give him some comfort. I left soon after and cried in the bathroom. A few days later, I was cleaning the hallway near his room and saw a sign that said, "Closed for cleaning and disinfection." That sign only goes up when someone dies. Story 24. This isn't really a deathbed confession, but a memory from when I was a hospice volunteer. I worked with a man who had a brain tumor. He was doing okay, except for that, but he was starting to get restless in the nursing home. One day, I took him for a drive around town, the place where he grew up. Almost every few blocks, he pointed to an old building or empty lot and said things like, "There used to be a whorehouse there." Sometimes he told stories about places that burned down or were torn down. We passed an old apartment building that looked strange, with more doors than you'd expect and some sealed up. He said, "That used to be a crib, and each door led to a small room where each worker had her own space." Then we drove under a railroad bridge, and he pointed to a flat area. "There used to be a black woman who ran the best whorehouse in the state right there." I finally laughed and said, "Looks like I know what you did in your youth." Story 25. My grandma had dementia for many years before she passed away. It got so bad that she didn't remember who her family was. She became scared of people and would lock herself inside her home. She even forgot that she smoked. Sometimes she'd find cigarettes she'd hidden months earlier and say she was desperate for one. She'd smoke just one, then hide them again for months. The only memories she kept were about her sister playing the piano beautifully and about her husband, her childhood sweetheart, who was gone. She didn't know he had passed away some time before. She spent her days waiting for him to come home. She'd say, "My John will be home soon." Sometimes when someone walked past the window, she'd look twice and say, "Thought that was my John." It was heartbreaking to watch her get worse, until she was on her deathbed, unaware of anything or anyone. When I went to say goodbye in a hospital, she held my hand and told me how much she loved me. She said she was ready to go be with John now. In that moment, she remembered me, what was happening, and that her husband, my granddad, had passed. She passed away peacefully in her sleep not long after. I'm so thankful I got to say goodbye and tell her I loved her. I've kept that moment with me for a long time without really understanding it, and writing this just broke my heart all over again. I miss them both so much, but I believe they're finally together again somewhere. Story 26. This isn't a dark story, but it caught me by surprise. I spent a lot of time with my grandfather in his last months. He was over 90 and had been married to my grandmother for more than 70 years. He told me he never slept with any other woman besides her. Then, out of nowhere, he asked me what it was like to be with more than one person in your lifetime. At one point, he was waking up from a nap, he was partially paralyzed from a stroke, and he said he'd been dreaming about being with Betty Grable. I never told my family about these moments. Story 27. This isn't a confession, just some thoughts I want to share. I had moved away for university when my grandma got very sick. She got worse quickly, only 6 months from when she was diagnosed until she passed. In her last few weeks, it was around Easter. I was really busy with work and school, hadn't heard from her. So I called her and managed to talk for just 1 minute and 34 seconds before she got tired and said goodbye. That night, I dreamed of her waving to me, holding a suitcase. When I woke up, I just knew she had passed. The next morning, my mom called to tell me. She said that in those last 3 weeks, I was the only person my grandma had enough strength to talk to. They believe she was holding on just to hear from me. Story 28. My grandma had dementia for quite some time before she passed. In her final months, she spent most of her time in bed, disconnected from the world around her. It was heartbreaking to see someone who had once been so full of life become so lost. One day, my dad and I went to visit her while we were also attending my grandpa's funeral. The timing felt strange. We were there to say goodbye to one loved one, while another was still fading away. When we sat with grandma, she didn't recognize my dad at all. It was like the years and memories had slipped away from her. She looked at us with confusion, but then she smiled and said, "Well, I'm not sure who you are, but you have nice teeth." That simple comment stayed with me. It was a small moment of lightness in an otherwise heavy day. I couldn't help but think about how much she must have been struggling, not even knowing that her husband, the love of her life, was being laid to rest just down the road. Though she was lost in her own world, in that moment she gave us a tiny bit of joy. I'll never forget how life can be fragile, and how even when people don't recognize us, they can still share something meaningful. Story 29. When my grandfather was on his deathbed, he told the doctor, "No way, I'm not dying." He fought hard, surviving 4 heart attacks and many strokes. But in the end, he passed away. Still, he was an inspiration. Some days, I struggle just to get out of bed or find a reason to keep going. But this old man found a reason to live, pure spite. He looked death right in the eye and said, "No, you're going to have to work for it." Story 30. This isn't exactly a deathbed confession, but it happened just a day before. My grandmother passed away in 2013, and my dad in 2014. Because of my great-grandmother's mental state, we never told her that my dad had passed. In her last days, she told us something very touching. She said she wished she could have done more for her eldest child, my grandmother, who was only 12 when she was married off to my grandfather. She also said that for the past few days, my dad had been in the living room talking to her. He was telling her it was time to go to their new home. She said he was very determined. She told us she was going to pack her things the next morning and leave with him. And then the very next day, she passed away. Story 31. The last conversation I had with my Aunt Rose sticks with me. She had manic depression, and during a visit to my dad's house, she went into a manic episode. When that happened, she would talk non-stop, rushing to get all her words out. That day, she told me she thought my dad held some anger toward her because of something her sister did, something that led to my grandfather's death. My grandfather used to do the numbers in the Lower East Side back in the 1970s. He often carried a lot of cash while spending late nights in bars. Aunt Rose said her sister was struggling with addiction and knew about the money. She had set my grandfather up to be robbed. During that robbery, he He was stabbed and died months later from an infection. He did manage to shoot both attackers, but I don't know what happened to them afterward. I always knew my grandfather was murdered, but they never told me the full story until that day. Story 32. A few days before my grandmother passed away, she was very confused. She kept talking about my mother having a child about a year after I was born, a child who was sent for adoption. She said it was a sad and terrible thing, and that I deserved to know about it. After my grandmother passed, I asked my mom about it, but she denied it. I believed her. A few months later, I found out that it was actually my grandmother who had adopted away a baby girl, a child born between my mother and aunt. Story 33. My Nana was well known in our family for her nightly ritual, a gin and tonic at exactly 9 p.m. every night without fail. It was a tradition she and my grandpa started on their honeymoon, and she kept it going for over 20 years after he passed away. That little drink was more than just a habit. It was a way of remembering him and holding on to those shared moments, even when he wasn't there anymore. When Nana was in the hospital, on her deathbed, we wanted to bring her some comfort. So we sneaked in a hip flask filled with her beloved gin and tonic. We thought it would cheer her up, help her feel like herself one last time. But when we offered it to her, she just looked at us, smiled that mischievous smile, and said, "You know, I've never really been fond of gin and tonics." We all laughed. Nana, the woman famous for that drink, wasn't even a big fan of it. It was such a perfect moment. Even in those final hours, she had her humor and spirit. She went out laughing at us, reminding us all that life is too short to take too seriously. Story 34. I'm not sure if this counts, but here's a crazy story from my life. I had a roommate named Ink. He was an ex-con. He moved in with our friend Brad, who worked as a printer. One day, they decided to counterfeit money and go on a road trip. When they came back, Ink got a call from the Secret Service. They said they just wanted to talk to him. They met at a Denny's restaurant. Ink told me to wait in a nearby parking lot and watch. The agents came out and took him away in handcuffs. While Ink was being moved between federal prisons, he called me many times. He told me to tell Brad not to worry. Ink would take the blame and do the time. But no one could find Brad. The police finally broke into his place and found him dead. He had taken his own life. In his suicide note, Brad said it was all his fault and that Ink was innocent. The courts accepted that as a kind of deathbed confession, and Ink was released from jail. Crazy stuff, right? Story 35. When I was in college, I lived off campus in an old house with a few friends. It was the kind of place with creaky floors and lots of stories, but nothing could have prepared us for what we found out. One day, the police showed up at our door with some wild news. They told us they had a deathbed confession from the person who used to live in our house before us. According to the confession, he had killed his lover after finding out he was cheating. Instead of telling anyone, he buried the body right in our basement. Then he built a fake wall to seal off the room and keep the secret hidden. At first, we thought it was a joke or some kind of urban legend, but it turned out to be true. The police called an archaeology student from the university to carefully uncover the hidden room and find the body. It was surreal, knowing we were living in a place with such a dark past. But somehow, it became part of the house's story. We started telling this to friends, and the reaction was wild. Some people were terrified, but others were fascinated, and a few actually volunteered to spend the night in what we jokingly called the dead man's room. They said it was a way to prove they weren't scared, and some of them even said they felt strange things, creaks, cold spots, or just an uneasy feeling. Living there wasn't exactly spooky every day, but knowing the story made it impossible to forget. Story 36. Many years ago, I worked in an ICU specializing in open-heart surgeries. One patient who stood out to me was a man in his early 40s. He had many tattoos, dark images like demons covering his arms and chest. You could tell he had a rough life. He came in for emergency heart surgery, but didn't recover easily. Doctors had to put him in a medically induced coma to give his body time to heal. He stayed like that for about 2 weeks, completely unconscious, with a breathing tube helping him breathe. When the day finally came to wake him up, it was a delicate process. We slowly reduced his sedation and removed the breathing tube. When he opened his eyes, he was overwhelmed. Tears started rolling down his face, and he began to cry. He told me, "I feel like I just spent an entire lifetime in hell. I've done horrible things, and I completely deserve this. For hours, he cried and shared his pain. He said he wanted to apologize to every person he had ever hurt in his life, friends, family, strangers. It was like he was carrying the weight of all his past mistakes and now wanted to find some peace. That moment stuck with me for a long time. It showed me how powerful healing can be, not just for the body, but for the heart and soul too. Story 37. My grandfather passed away from dementia about 10 years ago. During his last moments, he didn't seem to recognize that my grandma, my mom, and my dad were all there with us. But then he looked right at me with a sad look I had never seen before. He begged me not to waste my life like he felt he had. My grandma tried to stay strong, but I could see it made an already hard time even harder for her. I promised my grandpa I wouldn't waste my life, but even then, I knew deep down I probably would. And that's still true today. I broke my promise to him the moment I made it. Story 38. Around the time my grandfather was really getting worse, he started saying strange things about a group of people we didn't know, lots of war stories, and he kept repeating the word kitchens. At first, we thought it was just rambling nonsense from his mind. After he passed, while cleaning out their house, we found an old family book written by his grandfather. It told stories about Denver bootleggers during Prohibition, focusing on one man who ran a big operation in the area. We also found a box with pictures and some pins and a sash from the Masons. The photos show my grandfather, his father, and family members, along with an old man dressed like a 1940s gangster, wearing a suit and hat. We learned that my aunt used to visit a house as a young child that supposedly belonged to that man in the photos. When I looked up the property, it didn't have a regular street number. Instead, it was registered as an address one block away, owned by a company run by someone my aunt and mom say is related to us. Now, we think Kitchens was a secret name, maybe a nickname for someone my grandfather was connected to in the Masons. This Kitchens might be the man in the photos, and maybe even the inspiration for the main character in that old handwritten book we found hidden in the closet. It's like uncovering a hidden family mystery, a story buried deep in time. Story 39. This isn't really a deathbed confession, but it's a story about my biological grandfather. He was an angry man who drank too much and had racist views. He was really tough on my dad, even once pointing a gun at his face. You get the idea. When I was about 2, my dad thought it was okay to let me be around him for a bit. My grandfather insisted on babysitting me so my parents could go on a date. But when they came back, I was home alone crying. Shortly after, my grandfather came back with more beer. My dad and he got into a fight. Turns out he had run out of beer and needed to get some more. Because he didn't have a car seat, he left me at the house, saying he'd be right back. That was the last straw. My dad told him he was leaving. He would never see us again. My grandfather disappeared after that. He had already left my grandma and my aunt, so no one really knew what happened to him. Then, years later, my dad got a call that my grandfather had died. Before he passed, my grandfather told my dad he wanted to go, but asked him not to come along. My dad understood why and accepted it. After his death, my dad met my grandfather's widow. She said, "Sir, I don't know who your dad was, but that's not my husband. But can you help me with something?" She showed him a picture from my grandfather's wallet, a picture of me. We think that maybe I was the reason he turned his life around and passed away as a better man. Story 40. This isn't really a confession, but it's a story I want to share. My nan used to give me daisies whenever I was sick or upset. And every year on her birthday, I'd pick daisies from the garden and give them back to her. Daisies became our special way of showing we cared. I thought it was just our little secret, but when she was in the hospital, she told me the story behind those flowers. The love of her life ran a flower shop in Bristol. When Nan first moved to town, she was exploring downtown and found that very shop. She talked to the shop lady for the first time that day and ordered a bouquet of daisies. When the shop lady came out with the flowers, they accidentally tripped over each other, a real-life version of those trip and kiss scenes. They fell, their lips met, and daisies flew everywhere, even in their hair. They started seeing each other more, visiting the shop, going out for malts and dinners, but they never called themselves girlfriends. Nan loved her, but at that time, women loving women wasn't accepted, so she kept her feelings quiet to stay safe. After a few years of friendship and love, the shop lady was diagnosed with cancer. Nan brought her daisies to the hospital every day and prayed for her. but the doctors couldn't save her. On the shop ladies last night, they talked and almost confessed their love. One of Nan's last words to her was, "Do you remember the time we first met? With the daisies." It's such a sweet story. Now, I'll never see daisies the same way again. I miss my Nan a lot. She probably wouldn't agree with how my parents treat me now. Story 41. I want to share two deathbed stories that stayed with me. The first is about my friend's grandpa. He was a loving but strict man who liked to drink and sleep a lot. On his deathbed, he called my friend close and said, "I've left a lot of money to you. Life's not worth it. Spend it all. Spend it all on hookers and drugs." He died about a week later. I don't know if my friend followed that advice exactly, but he did spend the money. The second story is about my grandma. She suffered abuse from my grandpa, both physical and emotional. When she started showing signs of Alzheimer's, the abuse got worse. My grandpa kicked and pinched her. So we took her in during her last months. A few days before she passed, my grandpa came to visit. He pinched her cheeks and messed with her, thinking she wouldn't fight back. But she had a moment of clarity. She swatted his hand away and shouted, "Stop it. I'm sick of you and your ways. Go. Leave. No. I don't ever want to see you again." My grandma was always sweet and happy, so seeing her finally stand up for herself made me smile. Story 42. This isn't a confession, but a deathbed experience I had with my grandmother. When she was dying, I was the only one in the room with her. I could feel her breathing slow down with every moment. I knew her time was near. Even so, I felt her presence in the room, like something gentle and real around me. I told her, "It's okay. Don't worry about my dad and my half-brother. They will be fine. If you need to go, it's all right." Right after I said that, I felt her presence lift up, float above my head, and then disappear. Story 43. My husband's grandmother was a difficult woman. Maybe she didn't hurt anyone physically, but she was racist, selfish, and cared mostly about money. No one wanted to visit her in the nursing home. I did, but only because she lived close by, and I'm interested in how people act. I was never mean to her, but I didn't hold back my opinions about her way of thinking. She didn't like me for that. One day, she told me she didn't want to be on Earth anymore, something she said at every visit. This time, I asked if she really meant it. She said, "Yes, pray for me to die." She knew I wasn't religious, but I do believe in something bigger. I told her, "I can't pray for that. This is your life and your choice." She said, "I've prayed for it, but nothing happens." I explained that if it were me, I'd ask the universe to take me, but only if I truly meant it. She died that very evening. During all my visits, she never showed regret or changed her attitude. She was just as upset and unkind as the first day I met her. Story 44. I want to share a story about my great-granduncle, told to me by my family. Until January 6th last year, he was still alive, an incredibly sharp and funny man who lived to about 112 years old. I was lucky enough to visit him in February, just before the pandemic hit and changed everything. Despite his age, he had a playful spirit. I remember one day when he asked my dad to massage his feet, trying to get a bit of relief from the aches that come with living so long. He also asked for chocolate, even though it wasn't good for his health. That little detail stuck with me. Later, my aunt, who was with him in his final moments, shared something deeply touching. On his deathbed, he confessed that he never truly loved chocolate. The real reason he kept eating it was to hold on to the memory of his late wife. For him, chocolate was more than just a sweet treat. It was a connection to the love and memories they shared. It's a reminder that sometimes the smallest things carry the biggest meanings. Story 45. This isn't quite a deathbed confession, but it's a story I learned during high school. For a school project, I had to interview someone interesting. My dad helped me set it up. I got to talk to his old radiation biology professor, who was quite elderly at the time. We talked about his work, which was really fascinating. But then he started sharing his experiences from World War II. He had been a sailor on a corvette in the North Atlantic, protecting convoys from German U-boats. He said the service was a mix of boredom and physical hardship. The weather was almost always bad, and the ship rocked wildly in huge waves. But then he told me about something more serious. One night, during a storm, he got into a fight with a fellow sailor. It was over nothing important. The other sailor hit his head on the steel wall and passed out. The professor was terrified he had killed a man and would be punished. There were no witnesses. To cover it up, he dragged the sailor to the side of the ship and pushed him into the water. The next day, the man was missing. Everyone thought he had fallen overboard by accident during the storm. It wasn't unusual for sailors to go overboard in those conditions. No one suspected what really happened. I was stunned hearing this confession, a secret murder from many decades before. Of course, I didn't include this story in my school report. Story 46. This isn't exactly a deathbed confession, but it was close. When I was in nursing school, I cared for a woman in her 80s with severe heart disease. She had been in the hospital more and more often and felt like her time was near. One day, she shared something she had kept secret for a long time. When she was 17, she ran away from home because her brother tried to hurt her. She fought him off and never went back. She told me she hadn't told anyone about it in all those years. She was a strong and amazing woman to talk to, but she had no family and no visitors. Story 47. This isn't a confession, but a story from when my dad was dying. During those weeks in the hospital, he wasn't himself. One thing that really surprised me was how angry he got whenever someone touched his laptop, especially me. He even threatened me while I was trying to help save his life. It was scary and confusing. I think deep down he knew I was going to find out some of his secrets and was trying to come to terms with it. I wouldn't have touched the laptop if he hadn't been so secretive about the finances. My mom and I didn't know how to pay the rent. Luckily, he left a password hint that only close family could understand. I managed to get in and found out how to pay the rent, along with a lot of other things I wish I didn't know. Those secrets stay with me. I'll take them to my grave. Story 48. My grandfather once confessed to me that he had a son we never knew about. He said he had a child with a woman, but he left them both when the boy was born and never saw them again. He wondered if that boy, now over 50 years old, ever thought about him or wanted to see him. Right after my grandfather died, that son found us. He had been searching through obituaries all over the country every week for years. He lived in Louisiana, where both he and my grandfather were born. We were in Oregon, where my grandfather passed away. It was a surprising and emotional reunion for our family. Story 49. Okay, this isn't a confession, but it's a story with some spiritual and paranormal parts. Some people might not believe it, but it's important to me. My great-grandma passed away when I was 12. She had taken care of my mom instead of her own mother and lived with us because none of her children wanted to care for her. We stayed with her through the year her health got worse. She had Alzheimer's, and it got bad fast. She kept slipping in and out of consciousness. Most of the time, her eyes were unfocused. About a week before she died, she told my mom that someone visited her. At first, we thought she meant my mom, but then she looked straight at her and said, "It was my mom." She came to check if everything was all right. That's when we knew her time was close. My mom believes in spiritual things. She's seen things and knows that sometimes people who have passed come to visit loved ones to help them find peace. That same week, my great-grandma got worse quickly. She barely spoke and wasn't really there. One of the last things she said was to my dad, who was there with her. She suddenly looked at him and said, "Take care of them for me, okay?" He promised he would, and then she slipped away. Here's a bonus part of the story. A year or two ago, a family friend who was close to my great-grandma was dying. My parents visited her. Even though she was mostly unconscious, my mom and the friend had a moment where her eyes suddenly opened wide, the exact same way my great-grandma's eyes used to look. She looked at my mom and said, "I love you," several times. Then she looked at my dad and asked, "Are you taking care of them?" My dad wasn't happy about that question. He still gets mad when we talk about it because he felt like she was doubting him. Story 50. The last conversation I had with my mother didn't make much sense to me back then. I was only 8 years old. It was the day before she died. She pulled me aside and spoke only to me. She told me, "If something happens to me tomorrow, don't cry. You need to be strong and just move on." At the time, I didn't really understand what she meant. I thought maybe she was just worried or feeling sad. The next day, I came home from school and found my mother had taken her own life. It was the hardest thing I've ever faced. For years, I kept her words in my heart, trying to be strong, trying to move on like she asked. Sometimes I wonder if she knew more than she let on, or if she was trying to prepare me for what was coming. That moment, that conversation, shaped me in ways I'm still trying to understand. Story 51. This isn't really a confession, but a story from when I worked with a hospice patient. She had strong delusions, and her main one was about the actor Michael Landon. She believed she met him about 20 years earlier at a telethon, and that he remembered her, found her in the nursing home, and they were going to get married. Each time she told the story, it was very detailed. For over a year, she shared with me all about Michael and their wedding plans, how his character Haas was building them a beautiful ranch house. She would put on makeup every day, getting ready for the wedding, describing her dress and flowers. But each time the wedding was about to happen, she would tell me something terrible stopped it. Then, one day, I went into her room, and she told me they had finally gotten married that morning, and she was moving into her new home. She passed away that night. Story 52. My uncle's best friend was in hospice, very close to the end of his life. One day, my uncle and I went to visit him, not expecting much, but what he told me has stayed with me ever since. He said he was in Dallas the day President Kennedy was shot. It was chaos everywhere. People running, sirens blaring, and fear in the air. He told me he saw no less than 3 men with guns firing at the president. He said he used the words "no less" because the area was large and filled with smoke and confusion. He couldn't see the whole scene, and he was running, trying to avoid getting hit. But one thing he was absolutely certain of, there were at least 3 shooters. It was the kind of story that changes how you think about history, told by someone who was there. Story 53. My granddad didn't have a deathbed confession. He became unresponsive about a week before he passed. Cancer is a cruel thing. I think I might have played a small part in his passing, though. My mom and grandma visited him in hospice almost every hour. I FaceTimed my mom every night, and one time I called while she was with granddad. She asked if I could call back later, and I said yes. But then I shouted, "Hi, granddad. I love you. Let me know how chocolate tastes in the afterlife." Granddad loved chocolate but had lost his sense of taste in the last year of his life. That night, after a week of no change, he passed away just a few hours after I told him I loved him. I still feel him with me sometimes, especially when I'm with my mom. I hope he's proud of us. And I'm still waiting to find out how astral chocolate tastes. Story 54. One of my best friends is 25 years older than me. I met him when I was a troubled teenager, and his mom became like a grandmother to me. She suffered from psychosis. One time, she told me she had killed one of her babies and had been to prison for it. At the time, I thought she was just confused. She also believed she was 16 instead of 65 and wanted to go out drinking and partying. About a year ago, my friend called me. His mother had passed away, and he wanted me to come to the funeral. Many colorful and interesting people showed up, sharing stories about her troubled mind. It was there that I learned she had actually told the truth. Story 55. My granddad was always trying to stay positive and keep me and my dad's spirits up. He told us a funny story about when he borrowed a Powerpuff Girls DVD from my little sister, and by accident, also borrowed a very adult movie from the library. The library put stickers all over their DVDs to stop people from copying them, but that also hid the disc art. So, as a joke, granddad switched the DVDs, thinking the library would notice. He wondered if the library ever caught on, or if something else happened. Later, my dad told granddad that he had borrowed the Powerpuff Girls DVD and played it for my sister. What they saw? Well, it scarred us for life. My granddad laughed so hard he literally died laughing. It took my dad a couple of years to get over the fact that his story basically killed granddad. Story 56. When my partner had cancer, most of his 4 daughters from a previous marriage made it all about themselves. They cooked meals and posted on Facebook about making 20 dishes. For weeks after, they visited during his treatment in another town, making it really hard for me to see him. They told him not to cry because it upset them and said many other hurtful things. When he went into palliative care, he didn't want to tell them at first. After a week, he asked me to tell them. They all showed up with partners and kids. They were upset they couldn't stay with us, all 15 of them. They blamed me, saying they were there first, and it was their special time as a family. But their special time was just sitting in a room all day, talking and laughing among themselves, ignoring him, and waking him up because they thought he wouldn't sleep at night. An hour before he died, his last words were, "We should never have told them I was dying. It would be so much easier without them here. And I hate how they treat you. By the way, three of them aren't even mine. My first wife had lots of affairs. Call me harsh, but I wish they had heard every word." Story 57. My great-grandma died a few years ago at the age of 98. She had a deathbed confession that shocked my whole family. I wasn't there when she said it, but she admitted something we didn't know. The man we thought was her first and only husband was actually her second. Her first husband was abusive. She had two children with him, but she ended up shooting him to protect herself. After that, she left the kids at an orphanage. She also burned down their house, taking some valuables with her. She ran away to another state and let everyone in town believe the fire had killed all four of them. Her last words were that she always wished she could have found her first two children later in life to explain why she left them behind. Story 58. Back in 2011, my best friend took his own life at my apartment while I was out of town visiting family for Easter weekend. He'd been struggling with some things and was depressed for a while. I had left him to watch my cat and also to look after some people who were buying heroin from me. Things were complicated. I don't remember his exact last words, but his final texts were something like, "I just want all my friends to get along, and love you, bro." Our close group of friends had all moved from our old city to a bigger city about 100 miles south. We all lived within a few blocks of each other, but we had stopped hanging out over some petty arguments. It hurts me that I was kind of rude to him before I left. He was saying goodbye, and I told him something like, "Don't give me that stuff, dude. I'll be back in a few days. Just hang out and don't do too much of the stuff." He texted me again while I was driving to my family's place, hours further south, then used all the heroin I had left in one go. I spent the whole weekend frantically texting him, but I couldn't leave because I didn't drive. When I got home, I had to climb up an electrical conduit to get into my apartment. I found him cold and stiff on the couch. It was the worst day of my life. Story 59. My grandmother once told me something I hadn't heard before, that my grandfather, who had passed away not long before her, could be a very mean man. None of his grandchildren ever saw this side of him. To us, he was always a caring and loving man. It hurt me to hear this because I knew that back then, divorce or leaving a relationship was almost impossible. My grandmother must have carried that painful secret for a long time. Story 60. I wasn't there for this. I was only about 6 years old. But my grandmother confessed something to my mother that surprised us all. She told my mom that she wasn't really her mother. My mom already had her suspicions. She looks just like her father's second wife, and so do her kids, including me. Over the years, my mom asked many times if she was the second wife's child. She was always told, "No, no, you're definitely mine." Then on Christmas Eve, my grandmother called my mom and grandfather into her hospital room and made the confession. I think it was also during that conversation she said, "You're not allowed to die on Christmas and ruin it for the kids," because she could be kind of a difficult person. Story 61. I remember the last conversation I had with my grandfather. He was very religious, but always accepted that I didn't go to church. That day, he talked about the material world and the non-material world, like there's something beyond what we can touch. He kept asking if I understood, but I didn't really get it then. A couple of weeks later, he went to the hospital and passed away. But I still think about that talk like he was trying to tell me, in his own way, that he's still with me, even if I can't see him. Story 62. This is a bedside confession, the only one I ever gave my grandma. I grew up in Florida, near my dad's parents. They were educated. My grandma was an English teacher, and my grandpa had a doctorate in theology. They did mission work abroad for nearly 60 years. They were pretty worldly, and because they were close, they influenced me a lot when I was young. On the other hand, my mom's mother lived her whole life in South Carolina. She dropped out of school around 6th grade and never had much education. She left my mom's dad, who was a drunken schizophrenic, back in the 60s and worked as a housekeeper all her life. So there was a big culture clash between my dad's parents and my mom's. When I was about 10, we spent the summer visiting my South Carolinian grandma. It was hot, and she told me to roll up the glass. Since I was used to more proper language, I asked why she said glass instead of roll up the window. She got upset and told me not to question her, reminding me about how educated my other grandma was. I was a bit callous back then, and I'd done things like that before, but this moment stuck with me. Fast forward to 2017, when my grandma was bedridden and not doing well. While visiting her, I couldn't help but explain, "You weren't wrong. You don't roll up the whole window, just the glass part." She had forgotten the whole thing, but we laughed together. It felt good to give her that little win. She passed away in 2019 at 90 years old. Story 63. This isn't quite a deathbed confession, but it's a story my mother shared with me. When she was a little girl at school, she was given the job of getting the writing chalk from a high shelf. This was back in the days when kids wrote on slates. One day, she accidentally dropped the chalk. She picked up all the pieces but didn't notice one had fallen inside her vest. Later, at home, when her mother was helping her get ready for bed, the chalk fell out. Her mother thought she had stolen the chalk and punished her severely. She was never forgiven. This injustice weighed on my mother for her whole life. When her mother was on her deathbed, my mom didn't want her to think she was a thief. She said, "I really didn't steal the chalk." Her mother answered, "Yes, you did. My mother told me this story a few years before she passed away. It made me very sad. Please don't think her mother was cruel. It was just how things were back in those war years." Story 64. My grandfather passed away about 2 years ago from complications of Hodgkin's lymphoma. He was on a ventilator, but his oxygen was only at about 91%. He was very tired of fighting. He asked the doctors if they could give him enough morphine to put him to sleep and take him off the ventilator so he could pass peacefully. We were with him at the hospital for one last conversation. I remember walking over, holding his hand, and thanking him for being an inspiration in my life. I told him he taught me how a true man acts, with honesty and responsibility. He squeezed my hand and smiled. He said he was proud of the person I was becoming. His last words to me were, "Take care of yourself and try to be kind every day." Since then, I've tried to live by his words every single day. Story 65. This isn't my story, but one I heard from my father-in-law. His father was a wild and complicated man. During our country's military dictatorship, he was imprisoned and tortured just for selling books. When he came out, he was a very different man, not worse in the worst ways, but he became involved in stealing from the rich, using drugs, cheating on his wife, and eventually divorcing her. He even stole cars and traveled to Paraguay to sell them, and controlled illegal gambling. Despite all that, he was charming and crazy, but also a great father. When he was in his late 30s or early 40s, he caught hepatitis and spent the rest of his life in pain, mostly in hospital beds. Thankfully, we have free healthcare. Near the end, he said something that surprised everyone. He never felt bad about his life, except one thing. If he could do it all over, he would never have divorced Virginia, my father-in-law's mother. He died asking her forgiveness. Story 66. I was alone with my grandpa late at the hospital. His heart rate was getting low. We both knew his time was near. He squeezed my hand and said, "You always said you could keep a secret, so keep this one. That fishing spear I sold, the really old one, it was fake. The cash is in the third book." That was all he said. He chuckled, looked up, and within the hour, he was gone. I searched his bookshelves but found nothing. Then I went to the basement and found the cash. I felt guilty taking it, but I wanted to make sure the money was used for something he'd be proud of. I kept it for a while, then decided to buy a boat, a beautiful old wooden one. I got a loan to buy it and named the boat after him. Now I take it out fishing and do all the things I know he'd love. I hope he's watching, smiling down on me. I love you.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.